Welcome to the Brew News Podcast, all the news that's fit to brew. I'm Andrew Jennings.
And I'm Laura Jennings. And this week, we're starting something special with a history of beer. We decided a while ago that we needed to go back into time and share with you all what we found.
These episodes are going to be a bit different, and we're going to try and keep them fairly short. Instead of a standard tasting, Laura and I are going to try and drink some beers that are appropriate for the time period we're going to be discussing, but not go into too much depth about the beer itself, since it's really about the journey, not necessarily the beer. This series will also be a touch odd, as I'm going to be sharing research that I did with Laura. She hasn't really seen the notes, so this is going to be more of a cold reading for her. Just for point of reference, most of my notes and research came from William Boswick's A Brewer's Tale and some additional online sources. If you do want a good history of beer, though, I highly recommend A Brewer's Tale.
We hope you enjoyed this History of Beer Part 2 from the Brew News Pod.
Where we last left off beer brewing, it was really stuck in the monasteries. Beer's not going anywhere, it's not traveling, it's sort of stuck where it's brewed. There's no way to keep that beer fresh. Medieval times solved that problem. Not the fun little play place, but the time that was medieval. Like I said, up until medieval times, the beer was three things. It was malt, water, and yeast. At this time, we add that fourth ingredient, that one thing North American brewers love above all else, hops.
The preservative.
The preservative. So this actually gave beers their ability to get out of the monastery. So it's no longer the church is brewing beer. The church can brew beer, but now the church can sell their beer. Or you can open a brewery and transport your beer elsewhere. Beer could now be traded, transported, and sold. This actually led to the first craft beer boom, and it really happened wherever ingredients were plentiful. So you know Hamburg, right?
Germany?
Yes. Small little, relatively small town by today's standards, even. In the early 1300s, Hamburg had 400 breweries.
Wow.
It's because its location is between the Elbe Valley grain field and the Baltic hop yards. They had 20 ships that would then take that beer and sell it all across Northern Europe. This led to taverns, so no longer is the church sponsoring drinking. I guess they still are, but you can now drink non-church sponsored beer. But the Holy Roman Empire wasn't quite done with its control over brewing. This gives us the Reinheitsgebot. Well, we're going to drink a beer done by the Reinheitsgebot. This is the Weihenstephaner Premium Bavericum. And this is...
Which means?
Weihenstephaner is the brewery. The Premium Bavericum would be their premium
Bavarian. Wait, so is this beer. A brewery that is that old?
Yeah.
Let's
see. I don't know how old the brewery itself is because I didn't do the research. they actually did a... They're based in Freising, Germany, but they did a collaboration. Oh, since 1040 AD.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool. Now they're not brewing the exact same way, but they are.
What does it say on the bottle? World's oldest something.
The world's oldest brewery.
Well, there we go. So
1040 AD, still brewing.
Pretty old.
Yeah, and they brew all their beers under the 1560 purity laws.
I mean,
but we'll get there.
Oh, whoa!
Okay. Let's drink the beer. Enjoy these fine purity laws.
Can you taste the difference?
No, I really can't.
I don't know what I'm tasting for.
So the purity laws were set up to prevent... Yeah, it's skunked.
It's got some skunk
it's
to it.
It's got some skunk to it.
Like Heineken?
No, it's because...
It's actually not as bad.
Right. It's a good beer. It's very pale. It's a German lager. It's going to be more in line with like a Heineken or something like that. And what if you're used to that flavor. You don't like skunk beers, so... Yep. That's probably because it's imported too. Import beers never do as well.
I mean, I don't mind it. It's the skunk flavor is not that strong.
Yeah.
The scent.
1516 purity laws defined what could go into beer. At the time, they only knew of three ingredients. So it was water, hops, and barley. And the laws were ultimately amended to include yeast at some point. They also set up what the price of beer could be in Bavaria. Which is the one thing no one ever remembers, is they were really setting up how much you could charge the brewery or the tavern could charge someone for a keg of beer or a pint of beer. They also set up confiscation as the penalty for brewing bad beer.
They would just take it away from you?
Take your beer.
Oh, man, this beer is so bad. Take your beer. We have to take it all.
So this is most prominent in Bavaria, and it's still followed by the breweries there. So the Munich region of Germany. We have a couple of breweries around here. Red Oak follows the 1516 purity laws. I think they actually import all their grain, too. Those laws continue to this day in some breweries, typically in that region. And that really did hamper that region's ability to brew new things long term. So we're going to leave Germany, and we're going to head over to France for a little bit. And I'm calling this segment The Power to the People. Woo! Because while the church is brewing all this, and they're really codifying and controlling brewing, they are not doing all the brewing. A lot of brewing is still being done at home. Home brewing is going to be open fermented still at this time, and it's going to be similar to the Babylonian style, where you have multiple pots of brewing in different stages of brew. These beers, just like the Egyptians, are for laborers and farmers. So these are your farmhouse ales. And they're going, and today we know them as saisons. How were they able to manage to brew safe beer, or beer that could be drunk without resorting to hemlock? We'll never know, or we could find out. They actually did this by controlling the yeast. It turns out yeast, if you control the yeast, you control the beer. So to do that, they would top skim. Any ideas what top skimming is, La?
Skimming off the top. Brilliant. Of the carboy.
I mean, yeah, if I was doing it today, it would be the carboy. But whatever their fermentation tank is, yeah. So they skim the yeast as one batch is about to finish and a batch is about to begin. So you skim the yeast off and you toss it into the next batch. And that way the yeast are the same strain going from beer to beer. Now, the yeast on top of a beer is actually the healthiest yeast. So they are really controlling the evolution of these yeast. They're not putting bad yeast in each beer. So the yeast strains are getting stronger and stronger. Evolution ultimately is going to take over. You're going to have this super healthy yeast. They're going to move on. They're going to be transferred. They're going to schmoo, get the schmoo on, do a little dance, some little asexual reproduction, and they're going to create this fun frothy beer that's typically served flat because you want it to not be all foamy and crazy when you're drinking out of the keg. But because the yeast are so strong in these saisons, if you had tossed it in a bottle, you would have been able to get a nice bottle conditioned beer even back in France's heyday. While the French were being smart about it, the Belgian were being weird about it. I'm calling this style of brewing anarchy. The Belgians will disagree with me very heartily about that. But what they were doing, they created the lambic style. The Belgian brewers learned that there was something that will make this beer bubbly and fizzy and boozy. How do I control for this? So what they did is they actually created something called Cool Ships. It's spelled K-O-E-L-S-C-H-I-P-S, but it's pronounced Cool Ships. These are going to be large open tubs. Think like a giant bathtub. They want a lot of surface area because they are the cooling vessels for the wort. They haven't learned about yeast, so they don't know what makes beer go from this sweet liquid into the thing we love to drink, but they know they need to cool it down quickly. So they run it out into these metal, typically now they're copper, but these large wooden tubs or metal tubs out in the shed, the goat shed, the barn, open the windows, get a nice cross breeze going, and then next thing you know, you have a delicious lambic beer. They would use and reuse these cool ships over and over and over again. Ultimately, what would happen is after a couple of runs, the yeast and the bacteria that were getting into the beer would actually impregnate in the wood in the building itself. So every time you run hot wort into it, the steam from the wort would release the spores and impregnate the beer. So you're getting the same yeast strain over and over and over again in these beers. The next thing they would do, of course, is take it out, put them in barrels, and let them age, which would give a different bacteria some time to create some different flavors. You don't seem really excited about like lambics now.
Liebigs? I mean, they're okay to drink.
They're usually fairly funky and sweet.
Yeah.
So I don't dislike them, but they take a long time. Mm. You're looking at least a year. But that was how the Belgians controlled their yeast. The French would just move the yeast from one batch to the other. The Belgians would create essentially a inoculation chamber that the yeast would were living in already and dumping wort in. Pretty cool, though.
Mm-hmm.
The lambics these days are extremely difficult to make. Most of them are going to be brewed in Belgium because once you get a cool ship up and running, you let that thing go. There's some American brewers that are trying to create them, but in each cool ship is going to be very different. Every brewery is going to be very different because they get a lot of the local wild yeast by opening those doors, those windows, and letting a breeze, a stray breeze, bring that fly in to cool your beer. Let's move on to the Brits because we've really touched on the continent. They've developed their styles, so they've got their things. The Brits have a lot to do with beer that we drink today. So the British came post-Renaissance Britain. Brewing was a housewife's chore, like we've said before. It was something done in the home. Most things done in the home were handled by the wife or the woman of the house. By the 1600s, home brewing books were available, and this was to ensure that the beer was safe. And that there's beer in the house. You're supposed to, your job, one of your jobs, to make sure there's food on the table and there's beer in the house. They also want to prevent bad homebrew. I appreciate this. But at the same time, you also had commercial brewers that were on the scene. The Industrial Revolution changed everything for beer in particular, but everything else in general. Thermometers were created for the first time, so you could have consistent brewing. You don't have to, I believe some of the old recipes are mash it, until the water smarts on your finger. So you'd stick your finger in and see how hot it was. And if it's smart sharply or something, like it's too warm, I don't know. It also created urbanization. So for the first time, people aren't living in farms away from people. They're moving into the city. Living in the city, you don't have a ton of space to brew. You've seen my brewing setup. I take up a whole closet. But if we were in a small British place, mm-hmm. like a flat downtown London, I don't think I'd have that much space.
No.
Because of this, this led to also some other advancements in brewing, specifically in malting techniques and creating them dark, smoky malts. So let's grab a beer with some dark, smoky malts. I got us the Sam Smith. Taddy Porter is their famous Taddy Porter. Sam Smith's one of the oldest breweries left in England. It's actually a Yorkshire brewery, but this beer apparently was brewed in Tadcaster, which is in North Yorks.
Sounds like caramel.
Yes, it does.
Hmm.
Wow, that's sweet.
That is sweet.
It's very caramel.
Wow, yeah, it tastes like toffee or definitely caramel. Almost like a dessert beer or something.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
This would be my first beer of the night.
Yeah, I was expecting more of a traditional porter, mm-hmm. which they tend to be fairly light in flavor. Yeah, this beer is named for the people who drank it, or the porters. One of the things they would do is they would steal little sips from the beer as it would walk out. Porters are a very dark beer. They tend to be fairly bland. This one's not. But they're generally going to be fairly bland, sometimes smoky, sometimes roasty. They're also going to be high in carbs and pretty good in calories, too. So they were also a laborer's beer, a working man's beer. It was also a liquid nutritional supplement we're talking about still. So we're taking it all the way back from the Egyptians feeding it to their slaves all the way to in post-industrial revolution England, where they're drinking this because it's good for them, for their caloric needs. But they thought it was also good for everything. This is back in the time where like you could do a shot of whiskey for whatever ails you.
Mm-hmm.
What they would actually do is prescribe porter to nursing mothers. Just add some milk sugar. Seems smart. To save money on porters, they actually developed a very interesting style. What they would do is take a half empty keg of beer and fill it up with fresh beer. So that old beer would actually be a little funky and a little odd. And then you add new beer on top of it and blend it together. So the kegs never ran dry.
Oh.
And they would never change out the keg. They'd just refill it. You don't seem like
no
you
thanks.
Like that.
Is that what they did to this one?
I don't think so.
I drink it, the more you get like the bottle describes it as a tangy character.
Well, maybe.
But it gets a little less sweet the more you drink mm-hmm. it. Maybe it was like what we just had prior to, but...
No, it's not. It's this beer.
The more you're drinking it, it's not as sweet.
Yeah.
First sip was
very sweet. Super sweet. Yeah, but no, I could definitely see this. This would be very much more in line with that whole concept of the porter is blended between two.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good, though. I like this. So in 1786, the hydrometer was invented. This allows brewers for the first time to sort of quantify their alcohol, as opposed to that one will get you drunk, to knowing how much. Also, the 1700s, the British really hit their stride with Coke. Not cocaine or Coca-Cola, but Coke, the bituminous coal byproduct. So the Coke itself would actually burn. They'd use it in the malting process, and it would be such a slow burn. You don't burn your malt to create a roasty porter. You have these very light malted grains. So you finally, for the first time, are having pale malts. And this is very important for everything else that follows. Addition of pale malt to a porter. Pale malts by nature have more enzymes. They're more enzymatically active. They have more energy. So you add that to porter and you actually create stout that way. They're going to be boozier and more robust because there's more available sugars for the yeasties to munch on. Mm-hmm. And the pale malt is the key ingredient for probably the most popular beers in the world today. And I think that's where we'll end this history. And we're going to dive into some of the more variants of that pale malt next week.
Cheers.
That concludes this week's History of Beer.
Thank you for listening to this week's Brew News.
If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to subscribe and give us a rating in whichever app you found us on. We value your feedback, and it also helps the show reach more listeners.
If you have any thoughts or suggestions for future breweries, or are with a brewery and would like to join us, feel free to tweet at or follow us on Twitter at @brew_news.
We're on Instagram at Brew News Pod, and you can visit our website, www.brewnewspod.com, where we'll post links and photos and tasting notes.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platform you use.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week to look more at the history of beer. Have you ever wondered how you could join the Brew News crew? Well, swing over to patreon.com/brewnewspod and you can join us. We have three different tiers for all of our patrons. At the lager level, you earn early access to all of our podcast episodes. At the IPA level, you get early access to our podcast episodes, but you get special weekly beer tastings that are done by various members of the crew. And you get special video presentations, including our Beermas special. At the stout level, you get everything you get at the IPA level, but you also get to appear on one episode of the Brew News Pod, and when we have some swag, we'll send some your way. So feel free to swing over to patreon.com/brewnewspod. That again is patreon.com/brewnewspod, and join the crew.